Let me start up by just asking a couple of questions. Is there anybody in our congregation today that has served in the military? A couple people there. Somebody here? No? Okay, heartfelt thank you to you. And then a second question, is there anybody here in the congregation today that has lost somebody due to military activity? So our hearts really go out to you today, and we really want to take seriously Memorial Day message and hold you in comfort in our arms and hearts as best as we possibly can. And I'm going to be skipping any opening funny story today because I'm going to make an attempt to move from the ridiculous to the sublime, if I may. And so I just want to start with a true life story that pertains to me way back in the 70s when I made my first ever business trip through central Pennsylvania. And one of the legs of my trip took me through the town of Gettysburg, which I had never seen before. I had never visited before. So I decided to pull the car over, take this opportunity to get out and stretch my legs and see this historic town. And I ended up parking very, very close to what had been a massive battlefield during the Civil War. So I strolled over and just kind of rested my hands on the fence, leaned forward, and I gazed about. And I remember very distinctly feeling somewhat overwhelmed by some sort of very different type of tangible energy in that case. And as I scanned the field going back and forth, I really was unfamiliar with the statistics of the battle that had taken place on that battlefield and the number of soldiers that had died during the battle at Gettysburg. It was something that had taken place over 100 years before my visit to that site, and yet again, there was this powerful sense of an incredible presence that just prevailed throughout the atmosphere. And as I stood there, chills began to run up and down my spine. And it occurred to me that what had taken place on this site was something that was so hallowed and so holy and sacred that all of a sudden I felt like I was being very intrusive. That I really had no business being where I was. And that somehow I had stumbled upon and was trespassing on very, very sacred ground and being somewhat invasive. And indeed, a few months after that battle, President Lincoln would come to Gettysburg for the purpose of dedicating a portion of that field in honor of the soldiers that had died in that battle. And that's where he delivered his very famous Gettysburg Address. And one of the things that he said in that address was, "We cannot dedicate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men who struggled here have consecrated it far and above our power to add or detract from it." Later, I would come to learn that this was absolutely one of the bloodiest battles ever in the world and certainly in U.S. history. It was a battle that would begin on July 1, 1863, and extend for 3 days. And before it was all said and done, between the North and the South, there would have been in excess of 50,000 casualties. The magnitude of the battle was so profound that it reverberated throughout both the North and the South, through the Union and the Confederacy, and even got the attention of people from overseas at that time. Out of this battle, there would arise a custom. People in both the South and the North would begin to collect flowers and use them to decorate the graves of those soldiers that had fallen. And soon this would give birth to a new holiday, Decoration Day. And then later on, the U.S. Congress passed legislation which changed the name from Decoration Day to Memorial Day with the intention of honoring not those that have fallen in the Civil War, but any soldiers that had ever fallen and sacrificed their life on behalf of our country. It certainly is a very proper reverence for us to have mindful, not only this weekend, but always. So as we celebrate this holiday this weekend, the question comes to me, what is our takeaway from all of this? And so tomorrow, when we are all very busy barbecuing or just relaxing and lounging around the house and taking it easy, is there a proper frame of mind for us? Certainly to be grateful to and prayerful for those that have died is appropriate, but is there something more here? Might those that have sacrificed their life in that battle provided for us somewhat of a special and unique legacy? Is there a gift for us to be found in this situation? A gift that even transcends the wonderful gift of political freedom and liberty? And what about the losers? What about all of those Confederate soldiers that died in that battle? And in general, what about all of the enemies that have fallen in battle? Do they bequeath anything to us? Well, our topic today is daring greatly. And I hold that courage is the underlying virtue and the life force behind every other virtue. And I have read the book Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, and I share with you that it has had pronounced, profound influence on my life. And I also believe that without courage, it is absolutely impossible for us to move forward on our spiritual paths. And along with that, any act of courage necessarily carries with it, whether we are conscious of it or not, a decision on our part. So even when we act in a way in which we are seemingly unconscious or just reactionary, there's this element involved of us saying yes in some tangible way that enhances our engagement with the gift of life and elevates it to a new higher level of consciousness and a new awakening. Let's go back to Gettysburg for just a minute, though. Most of the history books have it, and I was certainly taught in school, that this battle took place as a result of General Lee of the Confederacy leading his troops into battle at Gettysburg. And it's certainly understandable, and it makes a lot of sense, because he certainly wasn't going through central Pennsylvania taking his troops on a picnic hike. There's also some historical evidence to suggest that very possibly this whole encounter, the way it took place at the time that it took place, may have been accidental. And without either side counting on it, they may have just bumped into one another. And this whole thing got started. And then 3 days later, again, 50,000 casualties. And I make mention of this because I think this has some application for us in our own lives. You know, we're busy living things out. We're lost, dwelling in our existing consciousness, and all of a sudden something comes at us. Something unexpected, something that we did not anticipate. So maybe, you know, we're at work doing our jobs, whistling and singing along, and the boss strolls in with a very somber face and says, "I'm really sorry, I have to let you go. We're doing layoffs." Or maybe you're feeling a little punky, a little quirky. So you go for an examination, and a couple days later, you're having open heart bypass surgery. Or maybe you're in a relationship that you feel is so solid and it's absolutely going to last forever until it doesn't. And for one reason or another, it comes to an end. All of these are situations that, in my opinion, are shared in a way by what those soldiers had to face. Because when something comes at us unexpectedly, we're left with that emergency mode thing of, oh, good Lord, what now? How am I supposed to react? What exactly is mine to do in this situation? I want to be a little careful here, though, because I don't want to send the wrong message. And I want to try to make something crystal clear. Any parallels that I draw between the experience of those soldiers at Gettysburg and what we have to go through in our own lives is in no way intended to diminish what had to be an absolutely hellacious experience for those guys. On the contrary, my intention here is to try to develop a firmer appreciation for this incredible, precious gift of life and a growing awareness that bravery and courage are always a necessary, essential response to any situation. And so from a metaphysical perspective, I'm trying to help you gain that appreciation by placing you in the boots of those soldiers over those 3 days. Every soldier that was thrust into battle brought with him his own personalized perspective of what the world was about. Every soldier had to be afraid. Every soldier had his own notion in terms of what was his relationship with the world. Every soldier had to adopt some construct, some paradigm in terms of how divine order was active in his life. Every soldier had to determine and decide what was his relationship with his personal God or spirit. Every soldier had to decide to dare greatly or not. Because over the course of those 3 days, all of it was going to become very real. And all of those determinations that I spoke about defined the soldiers individually and collectively. Those same determinations play out for us in our own lives. And maybe it's not so easy to see because we're on a very much less dramatic stage than 3 days of fighting on a battlefield. And even though this is 2018 with technology and the world is moving very fast, there's a certain degree of lesser intensity for us than what must have been experienced back in Gettysburg. But we too have to make all of those determinations. We too are afraid. We too have to determine what exactly is our relationship with this world in which we live. We too have to steer the course according to how we see divine order playing out in our lives. And we too have to decide what exactly is our relationship with our personal God or spirit. And we too have to decide to dare greatly or not. You see, this question of daring greatly or not, it's a universal question, one that has been part and parcel of our entire human existence. It's in our DNA. It's in our spiritual and biological, physical codes of evolution. Again, we tend not to see this or to view things in this light, but that's primarily because, for the most part, we've got it set on autopilot. And for good reason. Our brains are hardwired to identify and establish patterns and to develop for us useful routines. And you know what? This is a really good thing because it eliminates for us the need to take every single crummy little decision and go through a whole set of analytics about it. But with this awareness in mind, it is really important for you to do the prep work and to do the prayer work before you decide to settle in on any area of your life, because there are no guarantees in life except for the guarantee that wherever you have decided to settle in, at some point, somebody or something is going to come along and disrupt it. And once again, you are going to be left with the challenge of reevaluating life and your relationship with it. You know, the makeup of both the Union and Confederate soldiers was very varied. Without doubt, there were thousands on both sides who were so passionate and emotional about their cause. Without doubt, there were guys on both sides, not so much that this was the case. Primarily, they were farmers. Some would have been factory workers. Some would have been middle-aged men, some young men, some boys. Some would have been slaves. Some would have been fathers. Some of them would have been children. Regardless of wherever they were in that set of demographics, a year before this all took place, there's no way they could have anticipated that they were going to find themselves in the midst of this kind of a battle on those early days of July in 1863. And if you buy in at all to the theory that maybe this all happened by accident, there's no way they could have even have anticipated even the day before. How many of you would have been able to foresee your life play out the way that it has? I share with you, it really wasn't all that long ago that if somebody had told me that on this Sunday morning I would be standing on this platform trying to deliver a message to you, and that I was really very concerned about trying to minister to you as best as I possibly can, I would have said, "Nah, you're nuts. It's just not going to happen." Even the successful realization of goals that we set or dreams that we dare to dream, even in their very close realization, there's always that element of the unknown. And praise the Lord for this, because this is something that really adds to the spice of life. But in all these cases, the fundamental question remains: to dare greatly or not? The gift of life is so precious. In fact, it is so precious that it could tempt us to fall into error thinking. Because deep down inside, if it's not at an unconscious level, we still are all aware of how incredible the gift of life is, and so we have this tendency to protect it. It just makes sense. So instead of unleashing it, let it become part of the circulating abundance in the world, we try to keep it in the package in which it came. And then, of course, we do everything we can to protect the package. But when we engage in this, all that we end up doing is choking it and smothering it. Our way shower Jesus gave us the words, "Anybody who tries to save his life will lose it, and anybody who loses his life will never die." How absurd is it to be given an incredibly precious, invaluable gift and never take it out of the box? And Jesus also said, "I come so that you can have life and live it more abundantly." I very well may have shared this next story with you before, but when my granddaughter was 9 years old, she went and lived in France for 6 months as part of an exchange program. And at that time, leading up to that, I was so convinced that this was a bad idea. And I went to my son-in-law and to my daughter and basically said, "Do you realize what the hell you're doing? She's a baby, for God's sakes. How could you possibly just let her go and stay with a family that you never even met any time in your life?" And boy, oh boy, oh boy, was I ever wrong. It was such a positive, life-changing event for Ella. Not just for that experience, but for a growing appreciation that life is meant to be lived. and something that she has in her back pocket now for everything that she ever does going forward for the rest of her time. If you ever gambled, anybody ever gamble? You're probably familiar with the term of hedging your bet. What hedging your bet is banking on two opposing realities at the same time. So I have a sister who loves to play roulette, and she has a preferred set of numbers that she likes, all of which are red square numbers. And so when she plays roulette, she plays those numbers, but she always generally saves a couple of chips and places them on the color black to hedge her bet. And as a result, when she wins, she really wins very modest amounts. But boy, when she loses big time. Daring greatly means being all in, no hedging your bet. Having been raised in Catholicism, I remember growing up, there were all kinds of people around me that absolutely were adamant and saying, I don't believe in God. And then they would refrain from eating meat on Fridays, just in case. Daring greatly means embracing this incredible gift of life with all of the fanfare that goes with it, including the stuff that maybe isn't always so pretty, and embracing it without knocking on wood. Daring greatly means stepping forward and laying claim to your rightful inheritance as a divine loved child of God without keeping your fingers crossed. Let me share with you Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founder's words on this. When you know that living as God has planned it here and now is beautiful, and that you can know God's plans for you, you will be really interested in living. So what does it take to dare greatly, to be all in? What is that missing magical element that inspires the human spirit to do crazy things like jump out of airplanes in a parachute, or go hang gliding, or to climb Mount Everest, or do a mission trip, or look somebody in the eye and say, I'm really sorry. Or to look somebody in the eye and say, you know what, it's okay, I forgive you. Or to look deep within ourselves and see that mass of things that we regard as unworthy and say, I forgive you. Or to try to live our lives looking in the eyes of as many people as we can in a spirit of real love and compassion and understanding this incredible bond of oneness that we share. To dare greatly is to allow yourself to be vulnerable. Not just sometimes or on occasion, but always. And again, we turn to our wayshower and the difference maker that he was. And we understand that vulnerability is at the core, the heart and soul of absolutely every single solitary, meaningful human experience that ever was or ever will be. You probably are aware of the concept of a jihad. And a lot of people in the West don't like that word. It means holy war. And in the West, most of us tend to think it means holy war at our expense, that the Muslims are out to eliminate us. But if you're really at all familiar with the Islamic religion, jihad has a very unique, special meaning, because the single most significant jihad for a Muslim is the one that takes place within, in the battlefield that exists there, and all that is necessary for them to do to try to eliminate the separation which is felt between himself and herself and God or Allah. And to do everything possible to close that gap in a very meaningful, powerful way. President Lincoln, returning to his Gettysburg Address, spoke of a new birth of freedom and called upon us to honor those that died at Gettysburg by affirming and insisting upon that reality. Well, this morning, I echo that call for a new birth of freedom, and I echo it by inviting you to really engage in prayer and ask yourself, what does it mean for me in my life to dare greatly? And regardless of what you may do, whether you're an accountant, an attorney, a minister, a mom, a dad, a butcher baker, candlestick maker, what does it mean for you to lay down your life? And if we engage in this process of prayer and reflection, consistent with these notions, there could not be any finer way for us to honor any soldier, any patriot, any individual that ever laid his or her life down in pursuit of something holy and noble.